listening to Fox Sports Radio.
I do disagree with something Colin said today. He was saying process or something like that. Oh, look how goofy that process was. What they need, and talking about Philadelphia, what they needed all along was players. They got Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler had nothing to do with the process. And now look how well Jimmy Butler played. Jimmy Butler had nothing to do with the process. What is the process? And again, it's become a cliche, but the idea of we have a long-term goal, and even if we lose some games in the short term, as long as that contributes to the long-term goal, we're happy. I mean, I think that's a fair way to explain the process. Well, how did they get Jimmy Butler, the Sixers? By trading away assets, right? So that's always a debate. Do you want to have a team or do you want to have a collection of assets? And these new age analytics guys are like, until we're ready to win, the team part doesn't mean as much. We want assets. Because even if this one guy might play a little better with the current team, we want the guy that's got a greater asset value because we're probably not going to have this guy on the team in 3 years anyway. We're going to trade him. We're going to do something with him. And the only way they got Jimmy Butler was because they traded away assets. So now you could say that the culmination of the process, the way that it matured, would have been different under the former GM. But in general, it was accrue assets and then get ready eventually to win, however you can manipulate those assets. Brad, isn't that what they did, the Sixers, to get Jimmy Butler?
That is what they did. And also on top of that, being able to trade assets to get a player like that, by also having the process getting young players like Simmons and Embiid, you're more attractive as a destination for free agents to come your way. That is also part of the process.
I mean, think about it. Is Philadelphia was one of the worst teams in the NBA when the process started. For them, 5 years down the road, to be a top eight team, as they are right now, that seems like a success to me. Like if you're number 28, 29, 30, 31, and I say, I've got a plan in 5 years for us to be top eight, I think most teams like a Minnesota or a lot of these teams, Sacramento, that's been bad for so long, would sign up for that. The idea that we're looking back on the process in hindsight and sneering, boy, I think that's missing a key point.
I do, and I mean, it'd be like the Cleveland Browns going from their 1-31 two seasons to a team that's capable each year of winning 9 or 10 games. I think any fan would sign up for that, RJ.
Well, as a Steelers fan, let's see the Browns do it first. But but theoretically, I hear you.
Straight out of Vegas!
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Out of Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
I want to give Denver some credit. And this is a team, let's be candid, we did it too. There was a sense of, altitude, advantage during the regular season, all those back-to-backs. The opponent almost had a schedule loss, as they call it. Not having the big, big names, but the second seed. I mean, they were fighting with Golden State with the first seed. But then Golden State comes in on that big game and kills them. You're dismissed kind of feeling. Game two against the Spurs at home, down 0-1. Denver's season was on the line.
Yep.
They were down how many points?
19 points with like 5 minutes left in the third quarter.
They won. Game four, down double digits. Almost a must-win game. Won. They went into game seven against the most accomplished coach in the NBA. This was a new game seven situation for most of Denver, the Denver coach included. They win. Now, in a spot that I thought was horrible in game one for Denver, situationally, they win. I mean, Fez, to what degree, and maybe let me ask you an objective question first. How much have you increased Denver's power rating from the start of the playoffs?
Just half a point, RJ.
How could that be?
I didn't upgrade them at all for beating the Spurs.
Well, first of all, let's get something straight. You had the Spurs winning that series.
I thought correct? They had an excellent chance to beat Denver, yes.
No, whoa. Are you like on, he's like on a lawyer stand here or something. Let me ask you one more time. Who did you have, who was your pick in the San Antonio-Denver series?
I bet the Spurs plus 200 and I lost.
Okay, so by definition, Denver winning exceeded your expectations.
Very slightly.
You notice the delay. Listen, this is not a satellite phone, guys. This is Fez just paused trying to come up with an answer. So how can Denver not get credit for that?
Well, they were life and death to be able to get the win in seven games. Like you said, they had to come back from double digits in games two and four. They could.
That's a sign of a team growing.
There's no doubt, and I do think that they're improving. And I got to give you accolades here, RJ. You nailed this because you said, oh, this Denver lack of playoff experience really could cost them. But this team has responded much better than we expected to adversity so far in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think Fez is a little reluctant here to give credit where credit's due. I think that's the definition of life. You're going to face times where you're facing something new, and it could be your downfall. But if you're able to overcome that, not only do you advance, but you got that experience in your back pocket. Been there, done that. Next time, it won't be as daunting. And I'm not sure what's going to be daunting for Denver next. I'm not sure that happens until potentially they face Golden State in the finals of the Western Conference. Maybe that's daunting. But I think this series, there's nothing Denver could face that's going to feel bigger than what they faced against San Antonio.
Straight out of Vegas!
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Out of Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
The talk of pretty much the country today, if you listen to the Colin Cowherd shows of the world, Scott Foster tonight, the referee, Game 2, Houston Golden State, getting a lot of publicity, and we, unlike most, have the data behind it. As far as his impact tonight, hasn't been a good look here in the last six games for the Rockets.
Well, good look as in what effect has Scott Foster had on these games? Because what we know for sure is there's a whole universe in the NBA that we are oblivious to. The idea that this guy has a problem with that player, and maybe it's a personal problem, maybe it's, oh, well, this player uses the left-hand push-off more, and this certain referee calls it more than others. We don't know, but we know if you do the computer database analysis, there seems to be certain refs that do, or teams that do well with certain refs, and then they don't do well with others. Some of it could be fluky, small sample. Some of it is meaningful. Brad, you've got these Foster numbers. They seem quite meaningful.
Yeah, it does seem meaningful, even though it's only six games. We're talking six playoff games, the last six that Scott Foster has refereed Houston games in the playoffs. Houston is 0-6 straight up. Losing.
So let's be clear. This is the 17-18 season.
Yep, last 2 years.
So this is with Harden.
Yep.
With Paul, Houston.
Houston. 0-6 the Rockets are straight up. Losing those games by 16 points per game against the spread, 1-5 against the number, and compared to expectation being the Vegas line, Houston has come up short the last six games with Foster by 17 points per game.
Now let's say that one more time. So these aren't arbitrarily six games. These are the six games. Scott Foster, the referee, who's refereeing tonight, refereed Houston games. Houston hasn't won a game. They're 0-6. Now, you might say a bunch of close losses, right? They lost by 16 points a game.
Yep.
Then if you look at the spread, 1-5, and they're about 17 points short Houston is against the spread. I mean, what effect could be 17 points? Now, you might say, well, Houston, maybe they lost a lot of games that way. In the other games in the playoffs for Houston, those 2 years, Houston's 21-7 straight up. So if there's one variable, Scott Foster, yes, he's there, 0-6. No, he ain't, 21-7. And now you have Harden saying explicitly this guy's biased. So it's obviously something Houston's thought about. Now the question is, and Colin made this point today, is this something they knew Foster was reffing game two and they wanted to get the discussion started? Or was this a situation where once Houston started the discussion, the league came in and said, you want to cause trouble, here comes Scotty Foster. I'm not sure on that one. Fez, do you have any idea when the referees for these games are assigned?
Well, I know it's announced today, but I do not know, RJ, if it's pre-assigned. You would think it would have to be with travel schedules, right?
Yeah, to some degree, that makes sense. But how many days ahead do they have to be? I don't know. That's something we might want to look into. But regard, I guess to some degree, it's irrelevant because what we have coming to a head here is a Golden State-Houston game two, which seems so focused on the refereeing, the way that the game is being called, and we probably have the one ref that's been most extreme in the results with a given team. Not saying Foster's trying to do this. I don't know. But I do know that when you're 21-7 one way and 0-6 another, and when you're 0-6, you're losing by 16 points a game, it feels meaningful to me. So, Fez, let me ask you the question. We're straight out of Vegas. I'm RJ Bell. We're talking to Steve Fezzik on the line. I always ask this whenever we talk about conspiracies or things that aren't necessarily certainly something that affects things. Maybe it affects it, maybe it doesn't. Would you bet this Houston game without considering that Scott Foster is a ref? Meaning if somehow, some way Foster came down with stomach flu and he was announced out of this game, would that change your opinion on the game?
It would. And I got to be honest, RJ, I bet Houston yesterday before I had the Scott Foster news, and now new information comes in. I'm not nearly as bullish on my bet. Obviously, that minus 17 against the spread margin in the playoffs of Houston when Scott Foster is refereeing, there's two impacts here. There's the way the game's been reffed, and I think between the years, how Harden and how Chris Paul are reacting to Scott Foster as well.
Brad, as a fan, how much of the, because to some degree, if the referees are the story, it kind of takes away from the game. To another degree, it feels like this is the culmination, or at least the next step, of all the analytically driven approaches, because Houston tries to exploit weaknesses. If it's the way games are reffed, if it's free agency, whatever it is. Golden State's a little less heavy-handed about it, but Golden State tries to influence the refs as much as anyone, tries to figure out what they can get away with. It feels like these two teams deserve this being the storyline because they go along, you know, doop-de-doop-de-doop, all smiley, but in truth, they're trying to play every angle.
It does. And I don't – look, I think the NBA – would rather the series between two of their best teams, the Rockets and the Warriors, being the major storyline? Or do they? Because I would add all this intrigue about Scott Foster, because it's such a big storyline, does that add to the drama of the game? Does that actually, you know, result in more viewers?
Yeah, I think maybe beforehand, but anything that makes the calls into question, the final score, I mean, if you think back to the old Tim Donahue scandal, and what's funny is, if you go read up on that, Scott Foster and Donahue were allegedly best friends, talking multiple times a day, having 30, 40-second phone calls. You know, who knows what that's about? But the fact is, Foster was in that conversation 10 years ago, and he somehow survived. So, to me, he either has pictures of, you know, both of the commissioners, you know, nudie pictures, or Foster was legitimately not doing anything wrong, because I'm not sure how you survived this long if you were doing something wrong with all the scrutiny that came with Donahue. But Foster, I've heard the Foster name in more stories of referees than probably every other referee combined, which is interesting. We'll say that. But I think the thing about the Donahue scandal, and I was in the middle of it way back when, if the outcome of these games feels anything but legitimate, the whole point of the game goes out the window. So, yes, I think the drama's a nice thing for the league, but not drama about, is this a valid final score? Because if it's not, what are you fighting for, right? Oh, they won the title, but, oh, it was a crock. No one wants that.
Can I go contrarian here?
Yes.
Because all this data is out here about Scott Foster being so negative against the Rockers, the Rockets. Is it, do we see something different completely? He goes the other way subconsciously or no?
I think if he was a younger referee, we've seen the same thing with Duncan and different refs years ago. Once it becomes a story, they seem to revel in it. Like, I'm making my calls the way I make them, and I don't care what anyone says. My sense is no, but, and I think Foster's been around, he's taken enough heat in different arenas, it feels like he's going to be who he is.
And one more data point that might support James Harden having a beef with Scott Foster. 265 games James Harden has played the last 3 years. He's fouled out 4 times. 4 out of 265. 3 of those 4 were refereed by Scott Foster.
Just a coincidence, maybe.
Straight out of Vegas!